Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
This is Mitchell Davis, host of Taste Matters. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
It's Sunday. You're listening to a new edition of The Main Course. That means life is good. Jack, you're in the studio today. What an honor.
I'm here. I'm thrilled.
You're slumming today, huh? Doing The Main Course. You want to see how the shows on the other side of the tracks do every now and then. How have you been? I haven't seen you for a while.
I'm great. I'm here in the studio now, kind of trying to reimagine the space, working closer with the hosts, and things are going really well.
Yeah, fantastic. Ratings are skyrocketing, I heard.
That's right.
Yeah, that's really, really exciting. Well, I'm really happy, Jack, you're the one engineering today, because one of our greatest guests that has ever come on is coming on again to talk about a new project. Mark Ladner, welcome.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning. Mark is the executive chef of Del Posto. He also helped start such institutional restaurants as Lupa and Otto. He collaborates. He's, one of the most well-respected and liked chefs in the industry. And he now has a new project called the Pasta Flyer, which takes the warmth of grandma's cooking into an animated quick service setting by serving fresh, healthful, this is very important, gluten-free pasta. He is going to be launching a Kickstarter campaign that will go towards research and development and building out a small gluten-free certified commissary, as well as creating pop-up venues along the entire northeastern corridor of the United States before setting on permanent locations. This is not just to do research and open a chain of delicious pasta shops. This is also to help a cause, because a percentage of the Kickstarter earnings will go towards FARE, F-A-R-E, which is an acronym for Food Allergy Research and Education, specifically increasing food allergy awareness in schools and universities. So, wow, what an exciting project. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much, Patrick. We're very excited.
So we're going to divide this interview into two groups, two parts. The first part is all the interns in the news division of Heritage were like, really, Mark Ladner, this Kickstarter thing? Could we ask a question? And so we were like, fine, just ask all your questions.
Of course, bring it.
So, first questions. Where did the logo come from? And what is the logo, to explain to our listeners?
The logo is a mixture of a couple interesting ideologies that I've been a fan of for quite a while. One would be, obviously, our matriarchal avatar, Nona Farina. Nona being grandmother and Farina being wheat. And then UFOs, because everybody, likes UFOs. Tractor beam, right? You got to get grandma in the UFO somehow. And so, it was inspired by some Japanimation, which seems friendly and fun and, certainly appealing to a large demographic of young and old. And I just really like the idea of, poor Nona Farina being, toiling away at her small trattoria in the mountains of some small region of Italy, and being unable to entice guests any longer with her long cooked pasta. So the higher life form come along and beam her up and whisk her off to a busy Japanese metropolis and she gets to witness the efficiency of a ramen shop. And it's sort of, you know, she has an epiphany moment and realizes that she can make her pasta just as delicious, but serving a larger number of people.
Very, very interesting. It is an absolutely awesome video, and if it's okay, we'll link to it on the site. It is funny. It's done very professionally. Yes. We were just watching it, the crew, and it was very, very well done. The only people that will be offended are people who have actually been abducted by UFOs and had a terrible totally experience. True. So question totally number true. Two from the team. Do you have a gluten intolerance? Where, why, how did you get interested in this aspect of the project?
I do not have any food allergies. However, you know, working in fine dining, it seems that most people with dietary restriction, I guess we also, from a hospitality standpoint, sort of inquire very early on in the meal if people do have, in fact, any sort of restrictions. So we seem to be the people in the industry that have dealt with it first and maybe the most due to price point and other things such as that. And so I've been obviously inundated with allergies and food preferences for many years. And as most chefs will probably tell you, you know, it's sort of irritating, especially initially, but I quickly realized that the best way to deal it is to confront it head on and actually embrace it. So when we were initially conceiving this concept, we realized that we were going to have to accommodate gluten-free guests at some point anyway. So I started to do research and trying to develop pasta dough that could, in fact, be the one dough that was also that would also be gluten free.
And so this didn't really exist. I mean, you
it,
would
it, 3 years ago. No, it didn't exist. Today, on the shelves of some specialty food stores, you can find much better examples than maybe a couple years ago. But I do believe that our patent pending. Recipe and technique is better than most. And rather than trying to do fresh pasta, we're actually trying to simulate dry pasta. And the challenge with gluten-free flours is that without gluten, there's no presence of really of elasticity. So you're never going to get sort of that silky quality that you get from fresh pasta. However, with dry pasta, what you're mostly trying to accomplish is an al dente texture, which I've been able to simulate pretty successfully.
Well, I got to ask, interrupt this question line. So what's the patent process like for a pasta?
Well, vague, to say the least, at least for now. We have not really made much headway so far, but... It's definitely complicated, and we will have to hire some experts to help navigate it for us.
Very interesting. Fascinating. God. Fresh versus dry pasta. You've kind of covered that one.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a culinary history you were able to draw from? This is from Aaron, the executive director. Example, pastas that have been traditionally made gluten-free. I mean, it sounds... Like, no, I mean, this is more high-tech science.
Well, there are other pastas, more like crepes or like chestnut flour pastas. Most do also contain elements of gluten. So I would say no. I think this is a more recent sort of food phenomenon in the last, you know, several years. I have noticed that it is easier and sort of less disruptive in general when you go to certain countries in Europe and ask for gluten-free food. A lot of places, even in rural areas, seem to be able to accommodate pretty easily, which was unusual, surprising to me. And, you know, it's interesting, obviously. Most people know that the percentage of the population in this country and worldwide with celiac disease is very, very small. Some studies say that it may be growing. Some people obviously think that, you know, it's just being more diagnosed differently. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that's important to remember is that a lot of people are just choosing a gluten-free lifestyle for a number of different reasons, aside from allergies. And so we're trying to accommodate those folks.
So, hey, Jack, I'm going to keep asking. I have three more of the gluten-related questions from the team. Can you look up on, you know, one of your speedy searches, just some statistic about how many people are gluten intolerant or food allergies?
Yeah,
or, yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to contextualize. So, well, this kind of... Does that mean gluten that regular pasta with gluten is a little bit unhealthy?
Not necessarily. Some people have trouble in their upper intestine, and the gluten can sort of bind their ability to absorb other nutrients and foods, which is obviously very dangerous and can lead to certain the failure of certain organs. So that's very dangerous. But otherwise, you know, a lot of, as you are very aware of, you know, some of these older, you know, American the industries that produce, you know, white, hyper-refined white flour have essentially stripped the foods of nutrients. Mm-hmm. So your body's registering it as if it's, you know, receiving vitamins and minerals, and in fact it's not.
Hmm.
And that's dangerous. You know?
So Patrick, according to a doctor at the University of Maryland, 6 to 7% of all people would be affected by gluten sensitivity, meaning about 20 million people.
Wow, that's very, very interesting stat. So then you add to that the people that are not sensitive to it, but have made it a point in their life,
yes.
And then you're getting into, you know, a quarter of the population or something like that,
yeah,
or close.
Exactly.
That is a very big number. Well, thanks, Jack, for that. Let's talk about the sauce. Do you have to change the sauce because of the new type of pasta?
No, at all. It's not an... it's important to mention that because the pasta is gluten-free doesn't necessarily mean that this is a health food restaurant. The food will certainly be fresh, and it will be natural, and fresh lettuces and produce and herbs and things of that nature. But there will be, we will be using, you know, dairy products that are well-sourced, as well as butter and olive oil and all of the other... you know, tricks that I've learned over the last several decades making pasta. And most of the flavor combinations are pretty traditional,
mm-hmm.
and maybe predictable, but I know that I can make them better than a lot of other foods that are available out there in the quick service community. So I feel confident that that we can make a compelling product.
Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely sure you will, and I have great admiration. You've always been very quick to admit that you are blessed with all these opportunities.
Certainly.
Because of technology that you can afford, a staff that you can afford, luxurious kitchens that you could afford, and so I admire you so much for, you know, having all those opportunities, and then with your first kind of independent concept to do something like this that covers an important issue and kind of, you know, big thing for me, knocks at the doors, at the gates of fast food as we know it today.
Yes, no, I mean, I will certainly, and it goes without saying that I will make, you know, responsible and sustainable choices. I feel very lucky to have in my career, you know, had the opportunity to meet pioneers like you so early on and been able to embrace, you know, your ideology. And you've certainly, you know, informed us a lot about what needs to change. And, and food in America, and how to embrace that, and how to make it really work.
Well, you're a modern day Medici yourself. But so we're going to take a very quick break, and then we are going to come to my questions, which deal a little bit more with how this is a fast food concept and how you envision it, kind of like the 30,000 foot view, like looking at it as if it was McDonald's. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Mark Ladner from Del Posto. So, Jack, who was that? I like that kind of jazzy music.
Some of the full service music that that I put out in my second life.
Very nice. Your second life? You have a life outside of the studio? You work so hard here.
It's actually a life still inside the studio.
They should, have they invented a drug that gives you energy? Jeez, that is very impressive. Wow, that is good music. So we had a very good first part of the interview. We have Mark Ladner, the executive chef of Del Posto, who does other things as well. And he talked about his pasta flyer concept, which basically takes the warmth of grandma's cooking into a quick service setting. And it's going to serve gluten-free, fresh, healthful pasta. His Kickstarter program, which everybody should support, and I know the station is going to get behind, and Roberta's is going to get behind, and everyone with a conscience is going to give whatever is significant to them, whether it's $10 or $1,000. I believe they're trying to raise about $80,000 to $100,000, and this is a very important program because it is playing the game of the fast food industry and trying to bring decency and sustainability to quick service. So it's a fight we have to win, and of course the best way of showing support for these ideas is to support it financially. So that goes live day after Memorial Day?
Yes, Tuesday.
And it lasts for 1 month?
1 month, yeah, 30
days. Wow, 30 days. So yes. Wow, 30 days of McDonald's hopefully will be watching how that goes too.
Nerve-wracking, I'm sure. Nerve-wracking.
Well, yes, as people know, Quick Kickstarter, which is a fantastic organization, you have to set the amount of money that you're going to raise. And if you don't meet that in the allotted time, you don't get any of the money that's been pledged to you by all the different people. So this is one of the very, very, very strong ideas, and it's national in scope. So there should be no question as to the importance of the idea. Now we just got to get to work and raise the money. So I wanted to ask you, we asked a lot of the questions about gluten-free, and it was very interesting. And Jack gave us that great stat that, you know, maybe upwards of 15-20% of people, that's an issue for them.
Six to seven.
But then I doubled that. I still doubled that.
With the fad diets and people that just choose it as a lifestyle because it makes them feel better or lighter.
That is an editorial thing. Yeah, that might not double it, but, you know, something. That's 20 million people's a lot. So I wanted to ask you, is pasta flyer considered fast food? You use quick service earlier.
Yes. I would say yes, it does. It is. You can walk into a pasta flyer, satellite, and, our goal is to have a steaming, bowl of pasta in your hands in 3 minutes. So I would consider that to be fast.
Is the food revolution that, you know, we all enjoy, that we talk about all the time on this station, has it affected all Americans? And was this project trying to help that effort, or was it more the gluten-free? Like, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
The gluten, I would say, came second, because I had been thinking about this concept for probably a year before gluten even really became an issue. It was more, certainly more about trying to make food that was healthful for young people, for people on the go, for families, that utilized fresh, healthy food that wasn't overprocessed or that was made in some facility far, far away. It's not like we're looking to open 1,000 units. We still want to have a sense of community and have a local, provide something positive for the community that these places are actually in.
Although I think you could do 1,000. I mean, if it grows, if you centralize all purchasing and everything from one hub, but if you allow for charming inconsistencies.
Yeah, charming inconsistencies.
You know, I mean, but still it's a consistent product, but with slight variations, like Coca-Cola tastes different in different countries.
Sure.
If you tolerate that, then all of a sudden you could have 1,000 chefs.
Yes.
Working in 1,000 different kitchens, and you're never really at the lowest end of the totem pole. You're always somewhere on a team of 5 or 7.
It could grow. And they don't require very much space. They can be quite small.
What tools do you need mainly for equipment?
Equipment. We're still playing around with a couple different types of cooking devices. We haven't selected exactly which ones it will be. We're trying to create spaces that wouldn't require ventilation or hoods, because that allows you more flexibility. The goal in restaurant operations these days is trying to minimize costs so that you can provide a better, higher quality product. So, for example, we would never skimp on the food cost, because the food is what we sell. Mm-hmm. It's really all that we're offering. It's not like a very service-oriented concept. In fact, the ordering system is intended to be like an iPad automated kiosk. Similar to like an ATM machine or a subway.
Or airport terminals.
Exactly. Very much like some of the airport terminals that you see now. So that way you can minimize, labor on the service side and reinvest that that resource into producing and sourcing better food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, keeping it simple. Well, I've always said that pasta is the cheapest way to eat. Everyone's like, oh, there's an obesity epidemic. And I'm like, eat pasta 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. It's cheap. Mm-hmm. You consume very little meat, for instance, while still eating meat. You might eat only 2 ounces. Will Americans get on board? And what do you suspect the price points will be?
I think a very good indicator that has been encouraging to us is the sort of more recent ramen craze. As we will surely see in our video, we've been heavily influenced by Japanese street culture. And I really don't believe that Italian pasta is very much different than Japanese noodles. It's just a question of, the perception of how it's been delivered in the past, and nobody's really ever taken it successfully into a quick service setting, at least in my humble opinion. I do believe that you could subsist potentially on a diet, a heavy diet of pasta, although I would certainly recommend that you stay active. That's all.
Something like this might be $7-$8. So, I mean,
exactly.
It's definitely competing with McDonald's.
Exactly.
I mean, there might be a couple of dollars more.
A couple of dollars more. But, I mean, we really will use, the kind of product that I mean, I can't.
It still competes. I mean, people always look at the dollar value menu and say, oh, well, a buck for a cheeseburger. But if you order one of the meals with the Coke, and those are $5, $6, $7. So, I mean.
Well, the sort of like internationally accepted portion size for a bowl of pasta, or in Italy, it's more often a plate, is pretty much universally 100 grams, which is around 3.5 ounces, which is, intended for someone that might be consuming, one or two other courses.
A preemie. It's often a preemie, right?
Yeah,
exactly. A sort of appetizer.
But you're not going to fall down full after you have this. But, it's intended to be nourishing. You should, you want to stay nimble. You don't want to have a nap.
But you can also, so you're still going to stay to that. You're not going to go a little bit more.
No, I don't think so. If you're really hungry, order two.
Because Chipotle, it serves a,
it's pretty
good
big,
thing,
yeah.
But it's a massive thing.
It is massive.
Yeah.
It is massive.
So what is an ideal location? I know we're still a bit away from this. It's going to be research and all of this.
Well, that's a large purpose of the Kickstarter, is to try to figure out some demographics based on, Kickstarter supporters. Part of our strategy is to decide on locations primarily in the northeastern collegiate corridor. So say from D.C. and Philly all the way up to, Boston and maybe even western Massachusetts, Springfield, where there's a number of universities. Mm-hmm. So I'm from Cambridge, so the Boston area obviously is very dear to me. Also, I went to school in Providence, Rhode Island, yeah. which I adore, and I could very much see fantasize about having a satellite there at some point. So we're very excited just to kind of get on the road and see what the reaction is. I forgot the question.
Well, gas stations, and I mean, it could be anything, right? Highway.
Yeah, we
stops.
Don't really need a lot of space. Like I said, a couple hundred square feet, one large table, takeout. It's certainly something that we're working on, trying to keep standards high with food that travels.
Because wherever McDonald's opens, they've done all that research. Wherever there's a McDonald's, there could be a pasta flyer, know? I mean, it would be great if that was competing face-to-face right across some, weird bay, at a gas station. I bet a lot of people would want to eat that way. Will there be tables at these restaurants?
Yes, there'll certainly be tables.
And sustainable plastic forks and knives?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Well, an operation like this will obviously somewhat challenge your traditional buying habits.
Yes.
So, I mean, is that something you think about, or, how do you perceive this growing if it ever did get to 1,000 units? I mean, you have the potential to help start or grow many farms, it sounds like.
Well, the thing that you had mentioned earlier is something that I'm definitely interested in, is, trying to embed the idea that there would be idiosyncrasies in specific locations, and that you would be relying on the availability of product in specific communities, and trying to embrace that first and foremost before trying to, make the food seem the same in every place.
Yes, no, charming inconsistencies. Well, I mean, you're going to be really giving up a lot, because, you've stayed, only in a few places much of your career, and you know as well as I do that pasta is mostly bad when you eat out. I mean, it's an easy thing to screw up.
Yes.
And most places don't do pasta very well. So here you are going from having come in and day out to one or two or three kitchens in your career. Right. And now all of a sudden, do you worry that it'll taste bad if it's
run? Of course. I worry now, even in just the one restaurant I work in, whether it will taste bad on any given day. But, that's what a lot of this R&D process is figuring out how to keep consistency through volume and mass. and trying to alleviate as much variable for error from the equation of service before service begins. We're trying to create a pasta that is shelf stable, so it wouldn't require refrigeration. Hopefully, humidity won't play a huge role. So we've been working on trying to mitigate that, and a lot of the other work can't really be done until we have a gluten-free certified facility. Hmm. It doesn't have to be large, half the size of this studio. 200 square feet, just to produce and dry the pasta. And then it should be, shelf stable for transport.
Maybe one day you can hire. It sounds like you're going to need truck drivers to deliver to all these places one day.
I think so. Yeah. You have any resumes, Patrick?
Well, I can drive very, very well, as you know. You've driven with me around over the years.
Now,
I always ask this question. I don't mean it as a negative question, but do you worry that the chefs at these restaurants will not be chefs, that they'll just be button pushers? Which is one of the criticisms of McDonald's. Is that going to be part of your research, how to give them some type of authorship?
Yes. Well, I certainly think that is really, really important, although we are making an effort to try to bring back the more traditional role of the after-school or part-time job. There will certainly be somebody that will have to act as a manager and sort of the culinary expert. Although a lot of the menu will be predetermined, we will certainly leave opportunity for people to be able to express themselves. I feel like a large part of my role is making sure that people remain interested and motivated. So, that sort of dictates what will eventually happen. Without staff and support, you have really nothing. So you got to make those decisions, adapt or die.
So now if people watch this video online, which everyone should really watch, this very funny 2-minute video, very charming video about how this concept came to life with an abduction of a nice grandmother who was lonely in Italy. Will that look and that logo also kind of inform what it'll look like to people inside? It's kind of going to be a little space agey.
Yeah, well, I was initially introduced, actually by my children, to this brand that many of you may know called Tokidoki, which I identified with almost immediately because Simone Leone, who is the artist and the COO of this company, is of Italian descent, lives in Los Angeles, but creates in the traditional Japanimation style. So I love the idea of sort of combining these three cultures. And, so the design will definitely reflect some of this more modern Japanese street ideology, but then also mixed with, Italian grandmotherly tchotchka stuff. We'll have to see how that works out.
That's very interesting. Well, I always remember, I always quote you in many, many instances across many experiences, but one of them I once asked you what your favorite cuisine was, which is like a stupid question because it's like, what's your favorite meal ever or what's your favorite food? But you answered right away. You said, I think Japanese food is the most sophisticated.
Yes.
And I've always thought about that. And this is awesome that this concept kind of brings those two things together. Mm-hmm. Well, tell us details. So pastaflyer.com?
Yes, that's the website, which does exist. You can get more information about the Kickstarter. We also have a Twitter feed at pastaflyer.
That's a very funny Twitter feed. There is a question on that. Your hashtag for pastaflyer is what?
Pasta is the new ramen.
Pasta is the new ramen.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll see. Hopefully that'll work out. People seem to be lining up for that stuff.
And you're asking for, the amount that must be raised by the end of May.
Yeah, we're asking for for $80,000, more than half, which will go to funding our pop-up concepts and sort of demographic research, trying to find people that are as interested in this this product as we are.
Well, if you have friends that are interested in this concept but who might not want to listen to the whole show of the main course, you can lead them to the homepage of our website over the next month, where there will be pieces of this interview in 2 to 3 minute bits, very easy to digest and easy to understand the major points we covered. I, again, cannot reiterate, as someone who's in the food world all the time, day in and day out, how important it is that fast food, as we know fast food today, that alternatives are grow. It's very important that fast food alternatives grow, and this is one of them by a group and a person who's very successful already. So, you know, this is something, a horse to bet on for sure. I hope everyone gives. Mark, thank you so much for coming in. It's always a pleasure. I always learn a lot.
Thank you very much, Patrick. I appreciate your generous hospitality.
And Jack, thanks to you. And stay tuned for the Mike and Judy show coming up next.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.